Thank you. Court is ready to hear argument petitioner and for Justice Shannon Mutual versus Franklin.
May it please the court, Mr. David W. Coleman present argument for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether a non-owned vehicle qualifies as a temporary substitute vehicle where it is admitted that the vehicle is taken without the permission of the owner. Petitioner Progressive believes that as a matter of construction of the policy and as a matter of public policy, Texas law does not provide insurance coverage for vehicles taken without permission of the owner. Now, fortunately, this case, for the purpose of construction of policy.
What public policy is there about?
Well, let me point
people
to.
Not having to worry too much about being negligent about their cars.
Well, it certainly does. The public policy would be not to condone theft, not to condone people taking vehicles without permission of the owner, not to condone people thinking that they have coverage when they take vehicles. That they have no reasonable belief they're entitled to take. I think Justice.
Well, we're trying to get them in cars and insured out there on the road. I mean, we have all kinds of public policies to do that.
That's correct.
If someone could buy an unauthorized driver, then maybe they have to look at a person who is that pretty much unauthorized to drive in a car.
Well, in this situation, the policy to protect claimants is clear. There were three policies that were involved in this case. There was the Alamo policy, and Alamo denied coverage because the vehicle was taken without permission. Then there was a Progressive policy, and Progressive denied coverage because the vehicle was taken without permission. But then there was Sink's own policy, which because there was no insurance, The UM part of his policy covered him, and Sink was in fact paid by Great West Insurance Company $100,000. And this case was brought in the nature of a subrogation case as well. Now the public policy I think was best described by Judge Lindsay in the trial court, where she said, I'm convinced that if someone steals a vehicle, they're simply not covered by insurance. And that public policy, I believe, is a public policy that this court should adopt. Their respondent's position is that if my car breaks down, I can go ahead and steal a car, and I'll get insurance coverage.
There's no evidence that anyone stole anything.
Let me address that.
I mean, that's a pretty strong statement.
Let me address that. That's what Mr. Sink wants his court to believe. And in fact, the evidence would have been, came in through the opening statement. If you look at the record on page 50, where the opening statement begins, Sink broke into his employer's office. And the evidence is in. Well, I mean, it could be. I strongly disagree with that. The express permission wasn't dropped out of the policy. The entire definition of temporary substitute was dropped out of the policy. And the reason that the temporary substitute was dropped out of the policy was in a way to make it more readable, the policy more readable. This was back in the time, as you recall, when there was a big move afoot to make the insurance policies more readable. And this was called the readable insurance policy. It took 3.5 years to enact this policy. And they dropped down from 9,000 words in the family auto policy to 6,000 words. They had 13 definitions in the Texas family auto policy, and they have 4 definitions in the Texas personal auto policy. There is not a definition of the Texas temporary substitute in the new policy. Now, how do we determine what the definition is? Well, the court has said in the past that when we look to this, because it's a statutorily mandated uniform policy, that we look to the intent of the insurance board. And when we look to the intent of the insurance board, fortunately, we have a direct blueprint about what their intent was, because they issued a board order when they enacted the insurance policy. And they said, here's what our intent is. Our intent is to create a more readable policy, and we're not intending to affect coverage. And in those situations where we don't clearly change the scope of coverage, the scope and the nature of coverage, then you're to be guided by our prior decisions. I believe that that's a clear blueprint for this court to follow in determining.
What's the timing on that? Didn't that come out before the amendment that was issued yesterday? That was several years before the amendment dropping the language that was issued here first.
I haven't been able to nail that down. The respondent says in his brief that that amendment was made in 1995. We have gone back with our client back to 1986, and 1986 still has the exception to the exclusion. So the representation that there was somehow an amendment made in 1985 is incorrect. I don't know what the true story is. However,
so we really don't know if that directive applies.
Well, it does apply, and I'll tell you why. We know one thing, and that is that the definition of your covered auto has not changed since 1980. The definition of your covered auto is where the term temporary substitute auto is included. And the temporary substitute language has not been affected at all over the years. And therefore, I think it's clear that when the board changed, when the policy was changed, the Texas personal auto policy, that the board omitted the definition of temporary substitute auto for a reason, and that was to make it more readable.
Is there evidence here, one way or another, that had McCauley sought permission to use this car, would have been granted or denied?
It would have been denied.
Is there evidence that
Well, here's what happened. The Progressive's attorney got up and made an opening statement. And in that opening statement, he told what the evidence would be. And the evidence would have been that McCauley signed a paper that said he wouldn't take the vehicles without permission. That evidence was never presented at the trial, because once the court saw what the issues were and the fact that it was undisputed that McCauley did not have permission and did not have a reasonable belief that he was entitled to take the vehicle, then the court said, well, as a matter of law, I'm construing the policy, and I'm construing the policy so you don't need to put on any further evidence.
What would make a difference in another case if after the accident happened, there's testimony both ways, and it turns out that the owner of the vehicle would have granted permission had he been asked?
There are cases like that. There's cases like a ratification case.
What's the result if there is permission that after the fact before the ratification?
I think the majority of the cases that I've read, that doesn't equate to permission. Permission has to be before the fact. There are cases where courts have decided that the permission after the fact line of cases is not appropriate because that tends to foster collusion. So they require the permission to be before the vehicle is taken.
There's an argument that in the policy, there is a specific reference to the exclusion of the vehicle that is stolen. And the argument is crafted that if somebody stuck that exclusion in there, that must, to read all the policies together, the fact that they don't exclude from temporary substitute vehicle stolen vehicle, that means that they didn't intend to exclude that.
I have problems understanding that argument myself. Here's what we're talking about. Exclusion 8 is the exclusion that says that he doesn't get coverage when he doesn't have a reasonable belief that he's entitled to use the vehicle. And then as an exception to that is your covered auto. And the question is, well, why would that be an exception to exclusion 8? Well, here's what your covered auto is. Your covered auto means it's any vehicle declared in the declarations. It's any vehicle that you own at the time that you sent in a notice to the insurance company. And it's a temporary substitute vehicle. Now, if we're right, the temporary substitute vehicle, that inherent in the definition of a temporary substitute vehicle is the concept of express permission and implied permission. But it's the concept that you have permission of the owner. Then that makes a lot of sense because you don't have to, in these situations, prove that you had a reasonable belief. Number one, because it's your car. And number two, because you had permission from the owner. So you don't have to meet the criteria. So that's the reason it's accepted out of the exclusion, because you don't have to meet the criteria that you had a reasonable belief.
I thought you defined substitute vehicles.
No. The definition that was in the prior policy, which we're saying that the board order compels us to look to, the definition that was in the prior policy says, with permission of the owner. It doesn't talk about reasonable belief.
We found at least three cases where the car can be a temporary substitute. Even if it's taken about affecting the Washington District of Pennsylvania, 621, and one is a 213 Atlantic, section 692. And once in the Western District of Missouri, 340, but we can't find any cases of that does not explicitly require owner permission. Where the policy doesn't explicitly require owner permission, but the court holds it explicitly that permission.
Can you comment
on the national section of law?
Yeah. We cited an ALR article, the ALR fourth article. In that article, the author collects cases and he says, you know, although he says the courts are in accord that some permission is required in order to be a temporary substitute vehicle. We don't know whether it's the permission of the named insured or the permission of the owner, but the courts are in accord and cites a number of cases. We also cited a bunch of cases in our brief that support the general proposition that permissive use is required. There's also a case which I... Some of them do, some of them don't. There's a case, Sims case out of Louisiana. And the Sims case doesn't have the language in the policy, but it looks to the statute and says, which is a statute similar to our transportation code, and says, well, because it requires permissive use, we're going to require permissive use here. There's also a case called Longo, which we cited, which is a case out of the New Jersey Court of Appeals, I think 1997. In the Longo case, they said, look, if it's going to be equivalent to theft, we're not going to provide coverage. And that was just a general statement. Now, I'm not familiar with those cases that you cited, Justice Phillips, because I really have tried to do an exhaustive... I'll do that. I would guess, I hate to do that before this court, but I would guess that none of those cases had the board order that we had that directs this court on how to interpret the policies. And it's my belief that the court, that board order, coupled with the public policy, that we don't want to insure people against stolen vehicles, driving stolen vehicles. I think that those policy interests plus the construction of the policy are things that this court should look to in resolving this question.
How far can we move that board order to negate the express words of the policy? I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, I don't think they do negate the stress words of the policy, but
if they do, Fleming
Foods, I think, doesn't apply because you're dealing with a situation where you didn't have any kind of board interpretation. There's cases in this court where the court has said that, especially in this situation, where you have a legislature directing the board to act and create a policy, that this court gives that board great deference in how it interprets the policy. One such case would be National County Mutual versus Johnson, in which Justice Enoch in dissent cited a number of cases which said that the court would give great deference to the board. We also have the fact that the purpose is behind the board. I mean, the board was not trying to change coverage. The board was trying to create a readable policy. The there were no changes in rates after this policy was enacted. If it were true that there was this radical change of coverage between with permission to without permission, we would think that the board would at least mention that. And there is no mention, there is no language in the policy, there's no language in the statute, there's no case law, there's nothing in this record to indicate that the board consciously decided that it was going to change coverage.
Is there any study anymore that shows that this issue is going to affect rates, or that there's any, that there are a significant number of claims that involve a question of whether or not defendant drivers using a car with permission?
Not that I know. May I respond to your question? What the insurer assumes risks for and writes premiums for is permissive use. If this court adopts a rule that says that there's coverage for unauthorized use, then that creates unlimited liability for the insurer, and it's got to affect it.
It's maybe we've gotten it down to a 9-year period. There's no commission in the bulletin, and there's no standard file in the legal order. So we can go back, go over to the insurance commission, or even look in our own home file and figure out what that is.
There's certainly nothing in this record that would indicate that there was an intention.
But we could take judicial notice if we could ever find when this line is
correct. Correct. But one thing, and I go back to this. I go back to this, and I will try to help the court. But the one thing I go back to is that the definition of your covered auto was not changed since 1981. And that's what we're dealing with, really. We're dealing with the definition of the undefined term temporary substitute.
Any other
questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert Mall will present argument for the respondent.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I wanted to address a couple of points raised by counsel, the first being the date of the policy change. Appendix 6 to Progressive's brief attaches the 1981 version of the policy, which the Court will observe, as stated in our brief, does not include the subsequently added language to Exclusion 8, that the exclusion does not apply to you while driving your covered auto. Now, the change was certainly made by the time of this policy, which was August 1995. It was made earlier. I'm not certain exactly when the change was made, but it certainly was not in effect at the time of the board order on June 1st, 1981. The second point is with respect to the board order itself. It's unusual that essentially the argument is that the board order somehow carried definitions in the Texas Family Auto Policy forward into the Texas Personal Auto Policy, when that same order expressly repealed all provisions of the Texas Family Auto Policy and specified clearly that these provisions may not be used in any policy adopted in Texas after June 1st, 1981. And in that respect, if the question before the court is, what does a temporary substitute mean? The answer then is that one looks to common sense definition of that term. If one looks in the dictionary as to temporary and to substitute, one will not find any requirement of permission. Excuse me? Let me address that point very specifically, Your Honor, because I figure that question would come up. Let me address that point very specifically because the Court of Appeals actually hit the nail on the head on this one. In footnote 4 of the opinion, they analyzed whether this was a stolen vehicle or not. And they did what two civil practitioners didn't think of doing. They said, well, let's just look at the elements of Texas law as to vehicle theft and see if there is evidence to support it.
Well, but there's no evidence in this case because there's no trial.
Right. But the evidence, there wasn't any evidence of theft, period. The evidence was, again, that he took the vehicle, you know, because he was using it to get home, get some tools, come back, and repair his truck. The point being is that under Texas law, this is Section 31 of the Criminal Code, and I can cite to the court just as an example of how the courts have analyzed this point, Flores versus State, which is a case from the First Court of Appeals from 94, 888 Southwest 2nd, 187. It deals with the issue of whether, in fact, a vehicle was stolen or not. What are the elements? Under Section 31 of the Criminal Code, they point out that the elements of theft of a vehicle under Texas law are unlawful appropriation of an automobile, and two, with the intent to deprive the owner. Now, what is that intent? That intent is also statutorily defined to withhold property from the owner permanently or for so an extended period of time that a major portion of the value or enjoyment of the property is lost to the owner.
That is still a violation of the joyriding statute.
That's correct, Your Honor. I would agree with you that the evidence arguably would support a finding of unlawful use of an automobile. But then
that's
we get
a felony,
to,
isn't it?
I'm sorry. Yes, it is a felony. You're correct. But so is drunk driving is also a felony, and criminal and negligent homicide is also a felony.
But what you're arguing for coverage would apply to the home right. It would apply to stolen.
No, Your Honor. And the reason it wouldn't apply to stolen vehicles is because if the vehicle is stolen, as defined under Texas law, they find an intent to, and the Court of Appeals, like I said, hit this right on the head. The intent under Texas law, the finding is that the intent was to deprive the owner of the vehicle permanently. And if that is in fact the finding, then it cannot be a temporary substitute vehicle because the element of temporary is not present. In fact, the Court of Criminal Appeals has made this distinction. They point out that the distinction between, and it's cited in this opinion and I have the case as well, the distinction here between theft of an automobile and mere unlawful use is the person's intent to use the vehicle temporarily or take the vehicle permanently.
Well,
that's the distinction.
He can only use it as a temporary substitute to recover coverage of the theft.
That's correct. You're absolutely correct.
So and he can steal the car, but when his other car gets fixed,
No, again, Your Honor, if the intent is found under Texas law to deprive the owner of the vehicle permanently, then it's not a temporary substitute because the temporary element of the definition is not met. Well, again, joyriding is, that's really more of a policy issue the way I see it because, again, drunk driving is covered under Texas auto policy, as is criminally negligent homicide. The reason being is these are policy choices. Now, the question being, of course, is unauthorized, you know, unauthorized use in some respects, just like drunk driving, is, you know, certainly very morally questionable. The issue being, of course, is under the policy, the required intent that has to exist is an intent to cause bodily injury or property damage. And the courts, for example, in looking at the issue of drunk driving.
Are you answering the question about joyriding?
Yes.
If I take your car, just to joyride, I go around the city, and I'm bringing back, is that a temporary substitute?
Well, if...
And if I match it, is there coverage?
Assuming that your own vehicle is broken down, and your intent...
No, my vehicle is fine.
Then it's not a temporary substitute vehicle, because it doesn't fit any of the definitions. The temporary substitute vehicle only applies if your own vehicle is somehow disabled.
Okay, so now let's say my vehicle is disabled, and I do the same thing, and I have access to the coverage of the damage.
According to the policy definition, yes, there is.
So instead of having a trial within a trial based on whether or not the employer gave permission, we have a trial within a trial based on whether or not the vehicle is broken down the drive.
Well, in a sense, that's somewhat accurate, except that the evidence shows that the vehicle itself was disabled. And under Texas law, as
a trial, that might very easily be.
Well, in theory, it could be a contestable issue, but the interpretation of the policy under Texas law, and I've cited the case, the El Paso Court of Appeals is the one most recently interpreted, points out that under Texas law, this clause is to be construed very liberally in favor of the insured. And it is not required that the vehicle be, as I've cited in my brief, be impossible to operate or even extremely burdensome to operate to meet the definition. In fact, that Court of Appeals found that merely losing your keys in itself would be encompassed in the definition.
Or low tire.
Excuse me?
Low tire.
A low tire could well qualify as a breakdown. Could well qualify as a breakdown, you're correct.
I think the fellow who was driving, McCauley.
Yes.
He would be covered too.
It's his policy.
Yeah, so he could recover his own injury.
No, in fact, he can't under the policy. The reason being is that if he had PIP coverage or otherwise, I believe the policy specifically provides in that respect when they define your covered auto, they say accept a temporary substitute auto in those provisions. They do not say that in the liability provision. I pointed that out in my brief because I think it makes pretty clear that the board knew when it was adopting this language what vehicles were covered. There are certain parts of the policy, like uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage, that are expressly stated that they apply the definition of covered auto, and they expressly say does not apply to a temporary substitute auto. I believe that's the case there. Any further questions, friends?
Can you find out what date this policy changed in 1981?
I have attempted to figure that out myself, Your Honor. As I said, we have the 1981 version of the policy, and it's in the record, and it's not there. That we have this policy that was issued in 1995, the change is there. I've also tried to go back and look to see exactly when the change was made, and I've had no success. Probably Progressive is in a better position, since they receive all these things as a routine course, to identify that point. If they've indicated 86, then perhaps it's 86. But the change definitely occurred after the board order of June 1st, 1981.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a couple of brief points. Respondent said that there was evidence that he was borrowing the vehicle to use his tools. There's no such evidence in this record. There was evidence that came in the record on page 76 through bill of exception. Respondent never challenged that bill of exception on appeal. Therefore, the evidence was excluded and can't be relied upon on appeal. He also never raised that in this court. In the Court of Appeals, he attempted to rely on that evidence as if it were admitted evidence. And the evidence was a Progressive insurance agent that said he called me and told me his car was broken down. Had nothing to do with him going to get tools. What would have been presented, as stated in the opening argument, is that he broke into Alamo office, took the 1996 Monte Carlo, and we do have evidence admitted in the police report. This accident happened on Saturday night at 11 o'clock, so there can't be any justified reason for using the car of his employer. And that brings me to the reason why this court should not affirm the Court of Appeals. And that is, to do so will endorse the kind of mischief that you see in this case, where someone tries to get coverage when it's obviously not a situation where anyone expected that there would be coverage. In fact, the judge said, I cannot believe that there's any kind of reasonable expectation that someone who takes a car without permission of the owner could expect to be covered. And that similar situation, there was a Shell case, I think you'll find it, we cited it in a Missouri Court of Appeals, which took the same view and said, there can't be any reasonable expectation when you take a vehicle without permission of the owner.
And then, what is there a difference? Should our thinking be different on whether I am paying the premium, and I'm being insured, and my expectation of coverage, irrespective of what car I'm driving, than, say, Alamo's expectation for its coverage for its cars, and who may be driving it. You know, I'm focused on what I'm talking about. Is it reasonable under this policy for the parties to it to say, we're not going to argue about whether or not you had permission to drive this car in determining whether you yourself are still insured under your own policy. And we're just simply going to say that if it's a vehicle in substitute for your car that's broken down, you'll be covered. And we're not going to get into whether or not you had permission from someone else's car. That's their policy to argue about. But as to you, you have reason expectation of being covered if you haven't actually driven your car, and we're not going to be fighting whether or not your mom gave you permission to drive it.
I haven't given that particular scenario any thought. I think that the policy in Texas is that you don't get coverage if you take a vehicle without permission, whether it's an owned vehicle or a non-owned vehicle. And I think that there are situations that would apply to your analysis. I see my time is up, Matt. Such as the fact that probably the McCauley insurance, since he was the driver rather than the vehicle owner, his insurance would be excess over the primary insurance. And, you know, those kind of considerations would take part. But I don't think that's for this court to analyze. I think that's for the board to analyze. And I think the legislature and the board have made that policy decision that any temporary substitute that's taken without permission of the owner is not a temporary substitute.
Mr. Coleman, your argument, as I understand it, is it's a policy argument that basically in Texas we would not insure or wouldn't reward or whatever stolen vehicles, driving stolen vehicles. We wouldn't want to insure that. What do you say to his argument that we do insure a person, notwithstanding the fact they're drunk or they drive commit a negligent homicide or actually manslaughter?
I think those are policy decisions that are made. I think that I don't think we've gotten to the point yet in Texas where we're allowing coverage for unauthorized use of vehicles. We may allow, for example, there's the policy doesn't specifically say that it excludes punitive damages, but this court has a policy determination that says policy excludes punitive damages. The family member exclusion was, as a matter of public policies, considered to be invalid up to the statutory limits. Policy is always important to consider in the way that it informs the construction of a policy. We have to consider the consequences of each policy construction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument. The second call, Professor Mother, please prepare.
All rise.